up out there? I'm Frank D alongside my man Atlee Green. It is Monday, August 24th. Welcome to another edition of The Raw Deal right here exclusively on www.gerweck.net, Gerweck.net. And we are going to come up here right now and talk about NXT TakeOver Brooklyn and the SummerSlam pay-per-view. Before we do that, Atlee, what's going on, my man?
Same old, just coming off a weekend of wrestling. I mean, some of it good, some of it bad, some of it in between. Frank D, I'm sure we're going to get into it and then some.
Absolutely. I mean, we just saw last night's SummerSlam, and, you know, kind of going into this weekend's, you know, we had, what, Field of Honor going on with Ring of Honor. We had NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, and then we had SummerSlam. And it's just crazy because, I mean, we're going to get to it here, but I think that we both will agree that the NXT show was better than the damn main show.
I agree with that 100%, and I expected that going into it. And I think, basically, I think the extra hour kind of hurt SummerSlam, but we'll go into all that, and, you know, as we get into it. I think we're breaking down NXT first, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
Beautiful, beautiful. What were your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts on it was simply this. I mean, I had really, you know, kind of I was in the middle as far as my expectations of what was going to be on NXT. I mean, really, I mean, outside of a couple matches, the last show kind of disappointed. But this time, it was a different feel. I mean, they were in a bigger venue. So, you know, it wasn't going to be that kind of intimate setting that we would normally see at Full Sail. It was going to be, you know, just on a grand spectacle. And I think, honestly, that WWE, NXT, TakeOver Brooklyn, they really delivered big time.
Absolutely, Frank. And I think you really made a good point about how this was not an intimate setting. This was the biggest crowd they ever wrestled in front of for an NXT show. The announced attendance was 15,589 people for the NXT show, and they probably had a little more than that for SummerSlam the night after. And you have to wonder, based on the crowd reactions that you heard at SummerSlam and we heard at NXT, I mean, how many of the people that went to NXT did go to SummerSlam? How many people that went to NXT, you know, did not go to SummerSlam? Because if you go do a match-by-match comparison, the fans were a lot louder and, you know, a lot more happy with what happened at NXT than they were with SummerSlam.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, it was like night and day with that crowd last night in Brooklyn. And we're going to start off right now talking about NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. The first match of the night was Tyler Breeze taking on Japanese legend. I mean, saw this guy in WCW back in the day. He was in the very first Nitro match against Brian Pillman. Jushin Thunder Liger. And I have to tell you, Adley, I mean, the match was okay, but it did not live up to what I thought it was going to be.
No, I mean, I actually expected something different from this match. This was really a Jushin Thunder Liger showcase, because he did the palm strike, he did the Liger bomb, he did the senton roll off the apron. This is really just a match to say, hey, this is the Japanese legend that we've been promoting for weeks, and then now they pretty much showed everybody what he's all about. I was surprised, because I really thought they were going to use this Liger match as a vehicle to push Tyler Breeze, because Tyler Breeze is one of the best wrestlers on the NXT roster, and personally, I think he's main roster ready. I really do. But when you have guys like Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, Sami Zayn, and Kevin Owens on the roster, it's kind of hard to stand out when you're on that roster. But Tyler Breeze is definitely good. But instead of giving him the big win that I think he needed, they gave it to Jushin Liger, which I'm not going to complain about, because I'm a big fan of Jushin Liger from going back to the WCW days. And he won with the Liger bomb, 1, 2, 3 in the middle of the ring, and Liger's going back to Japan, and Tyler Breeze, we'll see what's next for him.
You know, I'm not at all surprised that Tyler Breeze didn't get the win here. Simply, it would just make no sense to bring Liger all the way from Japan, bring him into New York, just to job him to Tyler Breeze. So to me, you know, the right guy went over here, but at the same time, I do agree with you that Tyler Breeze is main roster ready. Tyler Breeze has been main roster ready for a long time now. And really, it's time to put Tyler Breeze back into that championship run. Basically, you know, him and Finn Balor, I think, can do pretty good matches. They can do pretty good business for NXT, in my opinion, at this point. But I don't know if that gimmick necessarily is going to translate well once Tyler Breeze makes it to the main roster.
I've actually been thinking about that, because there have been a lot of gimmicks in the past that they, whether they were in NXT or WCW or OVW or whatever, they did that particular gimmick on the development's territory, and then once they got to the main roster, Vince McMahon makes a slight change. It's kind of like the Ascension. They had the entrance, they were over in NXT, everybody liked them, but then, all of a sudden, he brings them to the main roster, and it's like, okay, we got to make them look a little different now. So what he does is he puts those shoulder pads on and makes them wear face paint, and they cut Road Warrior-esque promos. So, I mean, and Vince McMahon really thought, hey, this is going to make them even better than they were in NXT, and obviously that didn't happen. So that's one of the things that worries me, is that when Tyler Breeze does get to the main roster, what kind of tweaks, what kind of changes company going to make the Tyler Breeze character and the gimmick to say, oh, now he's ready for the main roster?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what changes will they make? I mean, is he going to just be called Breeze? Because, you know, when you go to the main roster, you have to take away the first name. I highly doubt that will happen, but you never know, knowing Vince McMahon and his mindset. I mean, his mind changes, you know, every single minute. And by the way, happy birthday, Vinnie Mac. It's his 70th birthday today,
that's,
which is incredible.
That's right.
So, send a, you know, special happy birthday out there from you know, the GRP and the Raw Deal crew here. The next match we saw was for the NXT Tag Team Championship. We saw the tag team of the Vaudevillians with the Blue Pants out there take on Blake and Murphy. And this right here was a very good match. This was a match that a lot of people thought that Enzo and Cass should have been in this match. And obviously that didn't happen. So I thought this was a pretty good match, and we saw brand new NXT Tag Team Champions, the Vaudevillians, who should have won the belts a long time ago, Adley.
You know, I've actually been a fan of the Vaudevillians for a long time. I like the gimmick. But one thing I always do notice is that when I talk to other people, there are a few people that don't like the Vaudevillians character. It's not that they don't like it per se, it just doesn't really appeal to them. And I was actually a little nervous because when they came out, for their match, and they made their initial entrance to the ring, they did not get much of a reaction. In fact, Blake and Murphy got a bigger reaction than they did when they made their entrances. And, of course, Blue Pants got the biggest reaction of anybody. And so I was really nervous that, okay, maybe the Vaudevillians aren't over, which is a shame because I like the gimmick. But, of course, as the match went on, the Vaudevillians were getting more and more popular as it went on. And then when they got the 1-2-3... Man, that place just blew up.
Yeah, they got a bigger reaction winning that match than I thought they were going to get. Because, like you say, the Vaudevillians, you know, their gimmick is kind of tongue-in-cheek a little bit. You know what I mean? It's like either you like it or you don't like it. But I think they proved themselves.
It's certainly not – the gimmick is certainly not for everybody, but those that like it really do like it.
Right. And it's very old school. I mean, I was watching the TakeOver show with my girl, and she was really into their gimmick because it was something different. It's something that was like you don't see that all the time. You know, it's kind of like the strong man and all that kind of stuff. It goes back to the Carny days, the real roots of, you know, professional wrestling. You know what I mean? That's where it goes to. So I enjoyed the match. I thought everybody worked hard in that match.
Oh, all four of those guys worked very hard as well. And I've always been impressed with Blake and Murphy as a team. I mean, mechanically, those are two of the most sound guys you're going to see in a wrestling ring, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And the next match on the card was the debut of Apollo Crews.
Yes, Dragon Gate's own Apollo Crews.
Actually, yeah, exactly. Taking on Ty Dillinger with the 10 count, which I thought was very interesting. He actually had 10 cut into his hair, which I thought that was actually kind of cool. But, I mean, what did you think of this match, Abby? I mean, to me, I mean, it was good, but it's like, damn, they gave Ty Dillinger a lot of offense on that one.
Oh, yeah, because Ty Dillinger has been the guy for a while in NXT that, you know, if you need a squash match or you need to get somebody over and make a statement, Ty Dillinger's the guy that they used to throw in that situation. Like, he was one of Samoa Joe's first guys that he wrestled. But now Ty Dillinger kind of proved himself, and they say, you know what, this guy can go. Let's give him a character. They gave him the Perfect 10 gimmick. And then they figured, okay, well, the Perfect 10 gimmick hasn't been around that often, so we'll have him, you know, put over Apollo Crews. And he did a very good job of doing it. And as you said, he got a lot of offense, so it actually wasn't really a squash match. It was a quick back-and-forth match where both guys got the shine. But in the end, this was the Apollo Crews show. And I was beyond impressed with him. And I know, you know, first impressions can kind of leave you, you know, can kind of make you wear rose-colored glasses, but I think Apollo Crews, just from this outing, has the tools to go all the way. I really believe that. I mean, I need to see more of him. My opinion might change, but, you know, from his days of Dragon Gate in Wrestling Japan, I've heard nothing but good things about this guy. I actually didn't even hear about him until he signed with NXT. Everybody's like, oh, Apollo Crews signed with NXT. I'm like, who? And then people started telling me, oh, you're going to love him. I mean, the cat was trimmed by Mr. Hughes, and you don't really hear about people being trimmed by Mr. Hughes, so I think that's why maybe some people, including me, didn't get the word about him before he debuted with NXT on Saturday. But, man, the guy is, he reminds me of like a shorter but more athletic Bobby Lashley.
I was just going to say that. I mean, when I was watching the guy the other night, you know, Apollo Crews out there, and, you know, he, you know, used to be the former Yuha Nation. And, you know, I said right there, I said, if they do the right thing, if it's best for business, we definitely will see Apollo Crews become the next NXT champion, maybe even go all the way to becoming the WWE champion.
I mean,
I can see it right there.
Oh, that's right. That's what I meant, Frank, by going all the way with Apollo Crews, because, again, I need to stress, this is his first match, so, you know, we gotta see more before we can make it more of an educated decision, but first impressions gone way through the roof. I mean, the guy is intelligent, he's articulate, he's athletic, and he's just, guy has a good personality. I mean, I would think if you're WWE and you have a checklist of guys you want as a prototypical sports entertainer, I think this is the guy.
Absolutely. I mean, he has everything. He has the in-ring ability. I mean, he sounded pretty good on the microphone. He connected with the fans out there. I mean, he has some flashy moves. And like you said, he is just a shorter version of Bobby Lashley. And I think, you know, at one point they were going to pull the trigger on Bobby Lashley. Some things happened, and it didn't work out. I think it will work out for Apollo Crews.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and the thing with him is, also, even though we didn't see much of it, I believe this guy could kiss somebody's ass.
Oh, he could.
I believe it. So, I mean, he has everything going for him right now.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the next match saw Baron Corbin go up against Samoa Joe. Now, mind you, Samoa Joe's been to New York many, many times already. But this was the first time he was in front of the big crowd in the Barclays Center and for WWE. So this was a very interesting match. I mean, you know, I really wasn't expecting much of it because of the fact that Baron Corbin was in the match. But surprisingly, it was actually pretty decent. I don't think, though, from what I heard, the initial reaction when Samoa Joe came out, it just seems to me that Samoa Joe is really not over with the crowd.
I don't think he is, just because when you hear about Samoa Joe, you hear about and you've seen all the awesome matches he had in Ring of Honor. You've heard about and seen all the awesome matches he had in Japan. And you've heard about and seen, you know, all the awesome matches he had in TNA. He hasn't had that performance yet in WWE, in NXT. And I don't necessarily think that's his fault. I just think that's who they've put him against, because Baron Corbin is still very green, and he's not the type of guy that's going to give you, you know, a chain wrestling classic with all these innovative moves. Like, they've built Baron Corbin from the ground up. He's a big guy, you know, former football player, and they're going to book him as a monster that kicks ass and takes names. And when you book somebody like that, 9 times out of 10, you're going to be very limited in the ring. You're not going to be a Brock Lesnar who can just do every move in the book. You're going to be more of a, you know, a diesel, if you will, that has 3 or 4 moves that look really good, and he figures the rest out on his own.
Right, and that's exactly what happened here. I mean, Samoa Joe, we've seen a lot of matches of Samoa Joe, like you just said, had in TNA, had in Ring of Honor, has had in other indie promotions out there, and it's just waiting for this right opponent. I think a lot of it, too, is that Samoa Joe has been working a lot of indies lately, and I don't think the WWE has really taken the emphasis of really putting Joe into a meaningful storyline. I think that's going to start to change as we move forward. I think there's some money on the table for Samoa Joe versus Finn Balor feud eventually. But for this particular match here, in which Samoa Joe got the win, I think that it was actually a decent match. It was a match that Joe was a veteran. Joe carried it. And I don't think that Baron Corbin did all that bad, but he has a long way to go. I mean, Baron Corbin has a good look, just simply being a big guy, and that's what WWE likes. But at the same time, he's got to get a singlet or something and tone up that stomach. You know what I mean?
I mean, I got to say, I think this is his best outing. I mean, because the takeover matches, I mean, his match with Bull Dempsey wasn't that good, and his Rhino match was a little better. And I actually did like Baron Corbin here. Again, he has a lot of room for growth. There's a lot of room for improvement, but I liked very much what he did in this match. And I was really impressed with his promo before the match. They did the video set, which yeah. I wish WWE did more promos like this. Instead of doing these video packages of all the images and videos that we've seen from the millions of episodes of Raw and SmackDown, they had both guys talking with Baron Corbin. Was like, look, I'm not here to, you know, make a name for myself. I'm here to make money. And then they showed all his attributes. They showed he was a former football player, showed a former high-level jiu-jitsu player, you know, showed everything he did in the past. And then he was like, you know what? I don't care that I didn't pay my dues. I'm not here to pay my dues. I'm here to make money. And he said that everybody else had to work 14 years to get here. For me, I made one phone call. And I liked his delivery on that. And I liked Joe's counter delivery. He's like, yeah, you made one phone call? Well, guess what, brother? They called me.
Right.
And
I
wish that it was a UFC style to that video package, and I really wish they would do that more instead of just the video vignettes, because you really get the wrestler's personality over a lot more.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Baron Corbin just came off to me like he should have came off. He came off as pretty much a badass heel who really don't give two shits about the fans or what you think of him. He don't care about the history or tradition of the business. He's only there to make money. It kind of reminds me of the Click back in the day, you know what I mean? Kind of reminds me of the same mentality of just, you know, it's all about money, you know what I mean?
Speaking of the Click, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, X-Pac were sitting at ringside for the festivities.
But no, they were at ringside, and they looked good. You know, I mean, Scott Hall looks, especially Scott Hall, you know, Scott Hall, you know, I'm glad to see that the guy's keeping his head on straight. Hopefully he doesn't have any more setbacks, and they all look good. It was cool to see them there. They got a huge pop from the New York fans. Everybody knows the Click curtain call, and it's kind of funny because it goes into our next match, which was, I mean, this is a top candidate for match of the year. It was for the NXT Women's Championship, and it was defending champion, The Boss, my favorite women's wrestler out there right now, Sasha Banks, taking on Bayley. And my God, this match was phenomenal.
The way I look at this is, I think there was an underlying theme with the hype going into this match that said, this is Bayley's time. And I liked that theme that they were promoting, but during this match, Sasha Banks was just kicking her ass so much and doing so many cool things. I really started to believe, you know what? I don't know how Bayley comes back from this. Like, this match was so good. Like, I actually was able to put aside all the IWC stuff, put aside all the, you know, analyzing this from a, you know, smart and up point of view. And this match just made me a fan again, like a pure fan, not thinking about the backstage stuff. Forget about who's getting pushed, who's not getting pushed. Just maybe only focus on what's happening in the ring between these two amazing athletes.
Yeah, this was just phenomenal. This was like one of the best women's matches I've ever seen. And you know what? This might be going on a limb here because I know everybody, you know, goes back to the Attitude Era and everybody talks about how great Trish and Lita were. This match blew anything out of water they ever did. It did. I mean, this had it all. And Sasha Banks is so young, but she's so damn good. That's the crazy part about it. The girl is only, like, I think, 23 years old. And she is just, she's having these five-star classics, man.
Oh, she actually came from my neck of the woods here in Massachusetts. And I actually, you know, was backstage at, you know, quite a few shows that she worked in the independent scene here in Massachusetts. And just talking to a few people, you know, that knew what was going on, you know, everybody was always telling me, you know, if you look in the booker, book her fast because she's getting signed sooner or later, and it happened sooner than later.
Right, and it was a phenomenal match in which we saw Bayley get the win over Sasha Banks. Bayley was an interesting character because Bayley had on her ring attire, she had some kind of wristband, but they were a tribute to Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, the polka dots, absolutely.
Polka dots, yeah.
Dusty Rhodes, you know, people in the NXT crew and the Performance Center crew, they hold Dusty Rhodes in very high esteem, so it was natural to see Bayley doing the tribute. One of the spots I definitely want to talk about in the match, it was simple, but I thought it was so well done. I thought it was such an ingenious move. I loved it when Sasha Banks got the bank statement on Bayley. And then as Bayley went to grab the rope with their injured hand, Sasha just started stomping on the injured hand while holding onto the bank statement. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, Sasha Banks is just, she's a shit, man. I mean, she's a shit. And when have you ever seen in your lifetime women get a standing ovation? Mind you, Adley, that some piece of shit out there named Greg the Hammer Valentine went on this whole rant about women in wrestling, yet Sasha and Bayley went out there and tore the house down.
I have to talk about that because I actually read the comments just before we came on the air, and some part of me wonders if he was just saying that just to work up the audience and just work the fans, because the whole line at the end, he's like, yeah, women should just be in the, you know, in the kitchen and barefoot and cooking dinner. It's kind of like, well, like, yeah, I mean, there are some people that think along those lines, but for you to say that publicly, you have to know that you're not going to get the best reaction. People are going to really crap on you for saying that, because this is 2015. It's not 1985. So part of me wondered if he was just working people, if he was trying to get a reaction. So if he was just working people, bravo. He did a great job, and he got his name out there for a few seconds. But if he was not just trying to get a reaction out of people and really feels the way that he feels, and those comments were truly genuine, then hey. It's like that kind of explains how close-minded of an individual he is, and that explains why he actually does backyard wrestling dates.
Well, you know what? I really honestly think that that's what he feels. I think that that's his mentality. And you know what? At the end of the day, hey, Greg Valentine, shut the F up. Because the bottom line is this. They went out there and tore the house down. They kicked ass. That was the best women's match I've ever seen in my life. I'm putting it to you like that. I've seen Sasha Banks have some good ones, but that right there was the absolute best I've ever seen. And they got a standing ovation from the Barclays Center crowd. And then at the end, Adley, we had saw it before in 96 with the members of the Click, but we saw another version of the curtain call with the Four Horsewomen. And I thought that was like, that is just awesome, man.
Oh, absolutely. And plus, I know they've been trying to refrain from using the Four Horsewomen thing because they don't want to get around to Ronda Rousey's bad side. That's at least the reports have been coming out through various websites. But I think that's kind of dumb because Flair is the one that made the Horsemen, and Ronda knows where she got the name from. And if anybody's allowed to use the name Four Horsewomen, it's definitely Charlotte, Ric Flair's daughter. So I don't see what the controversy is. But, I mean, it was an amazing moment that nobody crapped on. It's kind of funny because you mentioned the curtain call. And when those four men did the curtain call in 96, everybody was like, oh, it's going to ruin the business. But in reality, it was a nice moment. It was a different moment. And the fans were like, oh, this is different. And they took to it more or less. Same thing here, but on a different scale.
Well, you know what? I'm going to say this about the Four Horsewomen that Ronda Rousey is the leader of, and the Four Horsewomen in WWE. Okay, two different genres. And if you put it down like this, which one is more legitimate? The Four Horsewomen in WWE, because it is sports entertainment. It is professional wrestling. The MMA group that Ronda Rousey has, that's fine. But if I'm looking at it from the whole wide spectrum here, yeah, it's more legitimate in the world of professional wrestling due to the fact of the Four Horsewomen. And like you said, due to the fact that Charlotte, Ric Flair's daughter, should be out there doing it. So that's how I look at that. And they got a standing ovation from the fans. People were just like going crazy for this. Which leads us to the main event, Adley, which we saw the NXT Championship defended in a ladder match in Brooklyn. We saw the champion Finn Balor defend against Kevin Owens. And this was a pretty good match. It was a good ladder match, but they had a hell of a match to follow.
I mean, how do you follow that woman's match? And the answer is watch Finn Balor versus Kevin Owens, because that was one hell of a match. I mean, I'm going, the women's match is definitely match of the night for me, but this one was pretty close.
Oh, I have to agree with you. I mean, it was a very, very good match. I mean, just the risks that they were out there taking. And just Finn Balor is just so over with the crowd, but Kevin Owens is also over the crowd. And Kevin Owens was talking about when he came out there, how he used to sit up at the top and watch WWE pay-per-views, and now he's main eventing one. You know, which was, and his family was actually in the front row there too, his kids.
I mean, you could tell that dude was very proud to be main eventing an NXT show in the Barclays Center.
Right, and they took risks with the ladders. I mean, a lot of people were actually surprised that they didn't use any tables, but they didn't need it because it was good psychology of a ladder match. You don't have to have all that other junk. You just go out there and do the damn thing. That's what they did.
I want to speak to your point about tables. I honestly think a lot of times when wrestlers bring out a table in a ladder match, it's really just because they want to get a pop from the audience. It really doesn't make sense. And I really like the fact there were no tables. I mean, Kevin Owens got backdropped from the top of the ladder onto a ladder on the ground. And that just popped the crowd big time. And I liked how they both really, especially Kevin Owens, really tried to go for the ladder. And it was definitely a great brawl when the ladder was involved. But also, I just really like how they used it as a weapon as well.
Yeah, that cannonball into the ladder that Kevin Owens did, that was crazy. That was a crazy spot. I mean, they were doing all sorts of things with ladders that you hadn't really seen since Edge and Christian days. So that was just a lot of good stuff they did there. And of course, Finn Balor retained the NXT Championship, and the crowd goes home happy. And I have to say, man, that match there will also be a candidate for Match of the Year.
It was the perfect ending. Finn Balor hits the coup de grace off the top of the ladder, second to last one on the ladder, right onto Kevin Owens, and then climbs to get the belt, and he's still...
His second coup de grace,
yes,
in that match.
And he's still your NXT champion. There are two other things we should mention quickly, Frank D. There was actually a quick vignette, introducing Nia Jax, and that Nia Jax is coming soon. I don't know much about Nia Jax except for the fact that she is The Rock's cousin.
That's all I know. I mean, I've seen pictures of her at NXT shows they do around Florida, but other than that, I don't know anything about the girl, but I am a little bit, you know, intrigued. She kind of looked like Tamina Snuka a little bit, to be honest with you.
Yeah, she looked like a more badass version of Tamina. I mean, I'm curious to see what she's going to bring to the table. But, I mean, I think we'll have to wait and see. But they also announced, William Regal also announced that there's going to be a tag team tournament called the Dusty Rhodes Classic starting on September 2nd. And it's going to end, you know, at the next TakeOver event, which is scheduled for October 7th.
Yeah, and that's going to be very interesting to see the way they book that. I mean, they're doing a good thing here for Dusty Rhodes, keeping his legacy and his memory alive. And Dusty Rhodes was such a big part of NXT and such a big part of the developmental system down there. It's a great way to pay tribute to the man, so I'm all for it.
Oh, absolutely. Then, of course, they actually showed earlier tonight, they showed Ric Flair and Sergeant Slaughter hanging out together. And there was a Japanese wrestler that was actually with them. And all the rumors are saying that she is signed with them. Her name is Kana, K-A-N-A. It was actually shown in the graphic. And apparently she is going to sign with WWE and NXT. So I guess they're realizing that, hey, with Charlotte's Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks on the main roster, it's time to get some new blood in NXT.
Well, I mean, the jury's going to be out on that one because I know nothing about this woman, but I'm willing to give it a chance because NXT has really changed the way that you look at women's wrestling.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
Now, Frank, I got to ask you another question. Your opinion, I got the feeling that the ladder match with Finn Balor and Kevin Owens, I'm very much under the impression that this was Kevin Owens' farewell for NXT.
I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's now no longer on NXT. He's just a main roster guy exclusively. Now, do you think the same thing goes for Sasha Banks too?
I think it was. I think that's the reason why they did the whole curtain call, quote unquote, at the end there, because they're heading to bigger things, and it sucks because it's going to hurt the NXT brand. But then you bring in people like a Joe, like a Paul Cruz, like a Kana, and like a Nia Jax that are going to get big pushes when they come onto the scene. And I'm still thinking that there's going to be an eventual showdown between Joe and Finn Balor, which is going to be crazy when it happens. But yeah, I do agree with you. I think it was Kevin Owens' last hurrah on NXT, and Sasha Banks as well. That's the reason why I believe they were allowed to do that curtain call. And it was a great ending to a great show. The 2.5 hours went by really quick, and it didn't drag on. There was no backstage bullshit. It was just straight matches, and the lead-up to the matches was good. I mean, some of those NXT episodes were kind of hit and miss, but other than that, if we had to put down 5 stars, Atlee, what do you give NXT TakeOver Brooklyn?
I give it 4.5 stars. The only thing that's keeping me from 5 stars is the Baron Corbin versus Samoa Joe match. Again, wasn't bad by any stretch of the imagination, but I think all of the matches on the show, you know, for what they were supposed to do, every single match of the show had a different purpose. And all of those matches obtained their objective to the utmost, except for Samoa Joe and Baron Corbin.
I'm also going to give NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 4.5 stars, simply because I was disappointed with the Jushin Liger-Tyler Breeze match. I thought these two really didn't have any kind of chemistry in the ring when I saw the match. They just didn't have it. It just something wasn't there. And it could be because this is, you know, Liger's first time in a WWE ring. That could have played a part in it as well. But it's just to me that they just didn't really have that chemistry that, you know, really good opponents would normally have to pull off, you know, very good matches. And it just wasn't there.
You know, I actually expected to see Liger not only at SummerSlam in some capacity, but I also expected to see him for Raw. I really expected him somewhere at SummerSlam last night, but I think the New Japan deal with Ring of Honor kind of squashed all that, because Ring of Honor had a show in Brooklyn about 20 minutes away from the Barclays Center, and they had a bunch of New Japan pro wrestling talent on the show, and Ring of Honor was a little mad that, hey, why is New Japan sending Jushin Liger to WWE NXT? We have a deal with them too. And Delirious went over to Japan over the weekend, and their relationship now is stronger than ever. So I think New Japan probably put the brakes on anything like to do with Liger maybe appearing outside of NXT TakeOver.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. Because it's kind of a very, you know, awkward type of situation to have Ring of Honor in one, you know, 20 minutes away, and then have NXT TakeOver going on, and NXT TakeOver drawing as many people as they did. And I don't know yet the attendance for Ring of Honor, but I'm understanding and hearing, you know, that the ROH show was actually pretty good. So let's talk about SummerSlam. Or Steve Gerg would call it Summer Scam. but I'm gonna tell you right now, you kind of went into this situation kind of like, we'll see what they can do. I mean, it's 4 hours. It's the biggest party of the summer. They were trying to build this show up, Atlee, on the same caliber of WrestleMania. And we're going to go through it right now. The event started off with Sheamus versus Randy Orton. And I'm going to tell you right now, I am, for one, I'm sick and tired of seeing Sheamus versus Randy Orton, but I will say this was a decent match.
I'm sick of seeing Sheamus versus Randy Orton. I'm sick of seeing Sheamus, and I'm sick of seeing Randy Orton. But this was, as you said, a good match. And a lot of people rolled their eyes and groaned at Sheamus getting the win, but I think he needed the win here more than Orton, because he is the Money in the Bank winner, and you got to have some credibility for a guy who's going to cash in the briefcase someday. But also, before the Randy Orton-Sheamus match, the show opened with Jon Stewart and Mick Foley doing a little bit where Jon Stewart wanted Mick Foley to be his backup because he's mad at Brock Lesnar for breaking the streak. And, of course, Mick Foley, in pure Foley fashion, says, hey, I didn't hear the B in Brock. I thought you said you wanted to interview The Rock, not Brock. And Foley said, you know what, because you're interviewing Brock, I'm a little afraid of Brock Lesnar, so you're on your own, buddy.
Yeah, you know, it was okay, but I didn't really find it all that funny, to be honest with you. I just wanted to get the damn show started.
Oh, I didn't laugh one bit, but it was still, I mean, the fact of the matter is it's New York City, it's Jon Stewart, it's Jon Stewart's first, you know, public thing since he left the Daily Show, so of course WWE is going to put him all over this thing to capitalize on. I mean, they weren't really thinking of, let's do a good segment, let's just get our name in the newspaper because we have Jon Stewart for the evening.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool seeing Mick Foley, I will say that match. And Jon Stewart will definitely come into play as we go on here.
Yes.
The next matchup was for the WWE Tag Team Championships. We saw the New Day take on the Lucha Dragons, Los Matadores, and the Primetime Players. And I'm going to tell you right now, man, I never thought I would see this. But the top reactions from the crowd for the entrances of this match, New Day. Which, I mean, my God, you talk about the most entertaining act in WWE right now. We used to say, this shit ain't working, this gimmick sucks. They are the most entertaining trio in WWE, period.
And you have to give WWE credit for allowing the New Day to flourish in the way that they have, because most times when WWE tries to do something and it goes in a different direction, they get mad because they weren't responsible for the direction it went in. Case in point, Daniel Bryan. They weren't ready to push Daniel Bryan. They had no interest in pushing Daniel Bryan as a WWE world title main eventer, but the fans got behind him. The fans were chanting yes, 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 and DB, DB every single week, so they were put in a position where, begrudgingly, they had no choice but to push Daniel Bryan. WWE's always been that way, because you remember, when the New Day first debuted, they were supposed to be just straight, positive babyfaces. That's it. And then, once they realized that ain't getting over, they just told those three gentlemen, hey, you know what? We're going to turn you heel. Let's see what happens. And now, they're one of the most over acts of the company. And I'm really happy that WWE is letting them do their thing, even though it wasn't by design.
Absolutely. And then on top of that, primetime players, man. The pop they got from the crowd last night when they came out there. I've never heard that before from primetime players.
Oh, no.
That was just
everybody loves the primetime
insane.
Players. I mean, I actually saw it at the NXT TakeOver and SummerSlam, a fair amount of primetime player shirts in the audience.
Yeah, I did too. I saw primetime player shirts. I saw Sasha Banks shirts. I saw NWO shirts. It was just crazy. It was just crazy. And I'm happy for Titus and Darren Young, especially Titus. You know, Titus is just a real good dude. And I'm happy for him and getting that push. And he just looked like a monster last night in that match.
Did you see the big splash that Big E gave to Darren Young on the apron?
Yeah.
That was insane.
That was crazy.
I mean,
that was crazy.
The way I look at
it, would knock the shit out of you, literally.
Oh, goodness. And the way I look at it, as far as, like, a performance goes, you know, the MVPs of this match are definitely, you know, the New Day, without question. But, you know, as far as just, like, in-ring MVPs, in my opinion, it goes to Titus O'Neil and Kalisto.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Kalisto
oh, yeah.
In the first 5 minutes of that match, that dude was sensational.
Yeah, he was good out there. Sin Cara, not so much. Los Matadores, they were good for what they were. They need to really drop that gimmick and just make them, you know, the why can't they just be the Colognes or something like that? You know what I mean? I mean, this gimmick is just stupid to me. I don't really care for it.
I agree 100%, but I have to ask you a Kalisto question. I was watching this with a friend of mine last night, and it was the first time he really got to see Kalisto in action, and he was very impressed, and he actually turned to me and said, you know, Atlee, I bet you anything that Kalisto, you know, is exactly how they wanted the original Sin Cara to work out.
Oh, I think so. I mean, so Kalisto is going to be the next Rey Mysterio in that company. That's what they're going to be building towards. I don't think he'll ever be world champion. But as far as what they're doing with him right now, that's exactly what they wanted Sin Cara to be, the original Sin Cara.
I mean, he's a little smaller than Rey, height-wise, and maybe like an inch smaller than Rey. And I don't know if he knows English or not, but if he can speak English, you know, the world's his oyster.
Absolutely, absolutely. As far as, you know, Sin Cara, I don't know. I would have thought that they would just drop that and just gave this guy a whole new gimmick. Because that Sin Cara is just like, I don't know, man. It's just so scarred because of all the botches.
And there was
this guy
and there was
do.
A botch in this match too. You know.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, it's a cursed gimmick. It really is.
Yeah, it's just bad. It's awful, and they need to do it and just drop Sin Cara. But other than that, nonetheless, they did the Tower of Doom spot with Titus O'Neil looking like a monster, and I mean, it was just crazy. Just Titus O'Neil. This guy, when he comes in there and he gets that hot tag, he goes in there and starts working, people are connected with him when he's out there doing all those spots, and he's got people that's around him making him look very, very good. I mean, it was great, and I was really happy that the fans were popping for them, and, you know, The New Day got the win. They win the tag team championships again, which is going to probably lead to the primetime players chasing the New Day, which would be entertaining, and New Day, the celebration at the end. Crazy, right?
Oh, that was beautiful. And I loved even just the little things about that match, how Kofi snuck in the tag at the very last minute where you didn't know.
Right.
He was the legal man and they showed him the replay. Wait a minute. He made the tag when the guy was on the corner. Just brilliant stuff altogether. And to speak about Titus O'Neil again, Frank, I don't think this is going to happen, but I would not be surprised if one day WWE just got in the mode and said, hey, you know what? We need to push somebody right now. Maybe not to the belts, but We need a new main eventer, and we got to push somebody right now. We got to put the rocket on their back. If that conversation ever comes up, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Titus O'Neil.
I mean, Titus O'Neil has everything that they would want. I mean, he's getting better in the ring. He has that charisma. The guy's just an all-around good dude. So I would not be surprised at all if they say one day, hey, listen, you know, we're going to get you to that point. But I don't know, man. It's kind of like right now it's just a work in progress.
And right, and also on top of all of that, Frank, he is a public relations dream.
Yes.
With all the work he does with the parents and, you know, just all the awards he's winning, you know, and all the notice he's getting, all the props he's giving WWE and everything. He is just, I mean, he's everything they want.
Right, he is. I mean, just, you know, I mean, he was out there a few weeks ago, and I guess they had, was at a restaurant. I don't know if you heard about this or not, but they were at a restaurant, and he bought a lot of, it was a lot of homeless people out there. So he bought them dinner, and I thought that was so cool for a guy to take his time out and actually do something like that.
And it does, again, I mean, that's cool for anybody to do, but
yes.
You know, also, considering him, I mean, he's not the biggest name wrestler, so he's not making that John Cena money exactly, you know what I'm saying? So
right.
For him to do that, even though he's not making John Cena money, you know, that says something right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely it does. And it just shows that this guy's a good dude and a good human being all around. And I really enjoyed that match. That match was probably one of the most entertaining they had on that whole show. And I'm pretty sure people will be talking about the two main events, but that was a match right there that stood out to me. We go on to the next match here. Rusev with Summer Rae versus Dolph Ziggler with Lana. And, you know, to be honest with you, Adley, I didn't really give two shits about this match.
I'm with you right there and dead. I mean, I just could not find a reason to care about this match whatsoever. And then the finish being a double countout.
Yeah.
No, it was a boring affair all the way around. And the only thing that means is that this match is going to continue.
Yeah.
This feud. Yeah.
Yeah, this feud is going to continue, unfortunately. And I don't know what they're going to do. But Lana, I'm going to tell you right now, one of the things that was like really irritating me. Lana screaming out there at Rusev, all that shit's annoying to me, dude. That's just like, just screeching in my ear. And then on top of that, I don't know if anybody's ever really noticed before just how ugly Summer Rae really is.
I haven't noticed. I will refrain from saying that she is ugly, but she is stick thin.
She's ugly, dude. I'll put the shot out there myself. She's ugly. I mean, she needs a nose job or something.
I mean, I never noticed it till last night, but she is so freaking thin. Like, there's no muscle tone at all. And, like, every time she fell to the ground or took a bump, I was thinking to myself, she's going to break in half.
Yeah. Yeah. She's, I don't know what to say about that. I mean, honestly, if you're Rusev, and, yeah, I'd rather be out there with Lana. Than Summer Rae. I mean, out of the ratchet divas, they can put with somebody. They put Summer Rae with Rusev. That was just like, that makes no damn sense.
I'm going to tell you something right now, Frank. The day Lana starts wrestling, if that is her goal or what she plans on doing or what the company plans on doing, she is getting that divas title mad quick. Because just the way they talk about Lana and they talk about her character on screen, they talk about it with a certain care that they don't
right.
talk about the other divas with. So I really believe that, you know, if she ends up wrestling someday, she becomes the number one diva.
Could be. And hopefully, at some point, maybe that'll happen. But, hey, man, she got a long way to go. Because before you can be the number one diva, you got to get past the boss. You know what I'm talking about. Which leads us to this match. Now, I'm gonna turn it over to you, Adley. You can carry this match here because I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't give a damn about this match. I didn't even watch this match. I was doing other shit. So it was Stephen Amell, the Arrow, and Neville versus Stardust and King Barrett. You just give your comments on what you thought about this because I didn't watch it.
I actually really liked how they set this match up because it's been coming out for a while now that this is definitely a bucket list thing for Stephen Amell. I've also heard reports that, you know, most celebrities, you know, they're not exactly the easiest to work with when it comes to WWE, but Stephen Amell was very easy to work with. He was very professional, and he showed a lot of respect to the boys in the locker room. And most celebrities, when they're in the match, you know, they're the ones that get the hot tag. I liked how Stephen Amell got a few good moves to shine. I mean, the dude is ridiculously athletic. I mean, that leap, that springboard he did when he got the initial tag was ridiculous. And he definitely would be a solid pro wrestler if this is what he wanted to do. But I like how instead of Neville taking the heat and making the hot tag to Stephen Amell, I like the fact that Stephen Amell took the heat. in the match, he got beat down, and then he made the big tag to Neville, where he cleaned house and hit the Red Arrow on the Cosmic King, King Barrett, for the 1-2-3. It was a different situation where the celebrity used against the pin, but not this time.
You know, I will say this. I actually did see the promo before the match, the comic book style promo that they did. I actually thought that was pretty cool. I actually liked that. That kind of reminded me of some shit that I would see out of Batman back in the day, the 60s Batman. That's kind of what it kind of reminded me of. And the whole Stardust and King Barrett, I mean, maybe they can get away eventually from King Barrett, but if he goes back from that, you know, if he gets away from being King Barrett, then he'll be Bad News Barrett again. I don't really think that got over too well. I don't know what they do with Barrett at this point. I mean, he was the one who took the pin here, and Stardust was saved. I mean, are we going to have an eventual singles matchup between, you know, Stephen Amell and Stardust at some point? Do you think that's in the works?
I really would have thought that Stephen Amell would have pinned Stardust one-on-one, but I think this is probably a one-and-done for Stephen Amell. I could be wrong. That's just the impression I was left with after the match. But, again, talk about Wade Barrett. I mean, I don't know if he peed in somebody's Cheerios or said the wrong thing to the wrong person backstage, but for whatever reason, WWE just feels, you know what? We can beat this guy 80 times in a row. Like, they have no qualms about Wade Barrett losing a match.
Yeah, they really don't, and that's really surprising. I mean, this guy was so hot. And it's kind of funny because we're talking about him at SummerSlam. But if you remember, the pretty much the destruction of Wade Barrett started at SummerSlam 2010, the Nexus. So, you know, when they lost to John Cena that night, they completely killed any kind of momentum they had. And Wade Barrett has never recovered. I fought Barrett, you know, from, you know, the days on NXT to the Nexus to the Core. And the guy should have been multiple-time world champion by now. They keep sticking him in an Intercontinental Championship. And when that doesn't work, they put him with, you know, this stale King gimmick, which sucks ass. And I don't really know where to go with Wade Barrett at this point. I mean, Wade Barrett, you know, took the Red Arrow. He actually took the fall. Stardust was saved in that situation. So I don't know. I mean, I'm just kind of curious to see where they go with Barrett, but I know right now it ain't going to be too good for him, whatever they do.
I mean, the thing with Wade Barrett is, despite the fact that he was losing matches before he won King of the Ring, the Bad News Barrett gimmick was over. People really enjoyed it. And then I figured once he won King of the Ring, I said, okay, this is another thing to add to his persona that's already over. But for whatever reason, WWE decided, you know what, we can't have a king doing the Bad News Barrett gimmick, so they stopped him doing that gimmick. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? You know how many dictators, you know how many kings back in the day were dictators and acted like an asshole all the time and were rude and cruel to their people?
Yeah, I mean,
and now they can't have him be a jerk.
I mean, honestly, dude, the last time I saw a successful King of the Ring winner and who went on to, you know, be the world champion, and it was actually entertaining, was King Booker. That, to me, was the last time. You know, they were giving William Regal that spot, and then something happened where it didn't happen. I mean, they had Sheamus out there, and that kind of really killed his momentum when he was King Sheamus. So I think they just need to get rid of the King gimmick, period.
The two best Kings, in my opinion, as far as King of the Ring winners, Owen Hart and Booker T.
I have to go with Owen, Booker, and Macho.
Yes, oh, but I forgot about Macho. I wasn't thinking King of the Ring, I was thinking King, but those three, absolutely.
Yeah, we have to go with that. So we go from this match here with the comic book deal here that they were going with to another match that I gave two fucks about, and it was for the Intercontinental Championship. You got Ryback versus Big Show versus The Miz. And I tell you right now, my God, man, you could hear a pin drop when the Big Show came out there for this match. I mean, nobody gave a damn about the Big Show. This guy got no reaction.
This is going to sound unprofessional to me, Frank, but during this match, I changed the laundry, I took out the trash, I made a sandwich, and I grabbed a beer. And when I came back, right back off the pin. That's how much I cared about this match.
Well, I'll tell you what, Adley, I'm, you know, this is the raw deal, okay? This ain't Gurick, this is the Report Podcast, this ain't GRP, this is a raw deal, we say it how it is. And at the bottom line is this, when the damn Stephen Amell match was going on with, you know, Stardust, Wade Barrett, and Neville, and this match here, I gotta be honest with you, I was making out with my girl. I didn't give two shits about this match. Didn't give a damn about anything that was concerning wrestling. Did not give two shits. So, I know that Ryback retained, I just don't give a shit how he did it, and I don't care.
I came back for the finish, where Big Show knocked out Miz with the punch, and then all of a sudden Ryback clotheslined Big Show over the top rope, but then he pinned the Miz, and I thought it was weird because normally it's the heel that capitalizes when somebody else gets hit with the finishing maneuver, but never, the babyface never does that, so I was really surprised that they put Ryback over in a manner which normally suits the heel.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, because Steve and I talked about this on the last edition of the GRP, in which it was a segment we did called Best for Business and Ways to Revive the Intercontinental Championship. And one of the ways I thought about that was get the damn belt off Ryback. That's the first part. Second part would be put it on a guy like a Kevin Owens, put it on a Cesaro, you know, put it on a Randy Orton. You know, let Randy Orton go out there and do what John Cena has done for the United States Championship. You got to get that belt off Ryback. Nobody takes this guy seriously. It just don't happen. I mean, yeah, the fans were kind of into him last night a little bit, but overall, nobody gives a damn about Ryback. And it all happened when the dude, you know, got into that feud a couple years ago with John Cena. And then Ryback's on all that dumb shit they were doing. So if you want to put prestige back to the IC Championship, get it away from Ryback. That's how I see it.
I'm going to say a few things here, Frank, that's going to kind of put things in perspective. Are you ready?
Go ahead.
Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect, SummerSlam 91. Bret Hart versus British Bulldog, SummerSlam 92. The Rock versus Triple H ladder match, SummerSlam 98.
Yep.
What happened to Intercontinental Championship matches at SummerSlam? Usually, Intercontinental Championship matches are always good on the regular, but usually you're going to see the best IC title match of the year at SummerSlam, and now we get crap just like this three-way.
Well, I tell you what, I can even go further back when you're listening to great Intercontinental Championship matches. One match here that might be, you know, underrated a little bit, SummerSlam 89, Ultimate Warrior versus Rick Rude. That, too, was a good match.
I'll give you another underrated SummerSlam match for the IC title. SummerSlam 94, Diesel versus Razor Ramon with Walter Payton in this corner. That is a good match, but it gets lost in the shuffle because you had the amazing Bret Hart versus Owen Hart cage match that evening.
Well, I'll go one better. I mean, it ended horribly for Steve Austin, but Owen versus Steve Austin, SummerSlam 97.
People are so fixed there in the fact that Austin broke his neck that people forget that was a really good match.
It was a really good match up until that point. So that's a whole other different podcast talking about the Intercontinental Championship matches at SummerSlam. But nonetheless, Ryback got the win, and I think that's just bad for business to have Ryback out there with the championship. And we go on to another tag team match. There's a lot of damn tag team matches on this show. We go to another tag team match here, and it was The Shield 2.0 of Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose versus The Wyatt Family 2.0 of Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper.
The way I look at it, I think this was in many ways the blow-off to the whole Roman Reigns-Bray Wyatt conflict. There was nothing wrong with the match, but I expected more considering the four individuals in this match.
Yeah, I'm not a Dean Ambrose fan at all. People who listen to the GRP or people who follow the Facebook group, if they say overrated wrestler, I say Dean Ambrose.
I mean, the thing is, I am a big Dean Ambrose guy, but at the same time, I do see why people are not feeling him. I do see why. I mean, I'm not blind to it.
I mean, I would still like somebody out there to tell me, and you can do this at GerbReport@gmail.com. Also, you can hit us up on the Facebook page. Why do they call Dean Ambrose the titty master? I still want to know the answer to that. I mean, what titties is he mastering? That's what I want to know, Abby. That's the most important thing people need to know. Why do they call him the titty master?
I don't know.
Because the way I look at the situation is simply this. If you look at Renee Young, right, and I'm, you know, she ain't got no titties. So I want to know why they call him the titty master. That's just my point of view. I kind of would like to know that answer.
Inquiring minds want to know.
Inquiring minds want to know. So if you can tell me why they call him the titty master at GerrickReport@gmail.com, Frank D would like to know. I mean, I really got to know. And that leads us to the next matchup that we saw that evening. It was for the WWE, United States, and World Heavyweight Championship. You have John Cena, who came out there, and of course he was booed. Of course the people didn't care about Cena. They were saying John Cena sucks, which I think now they just do it because it's a cool thing to do. Because I don't think John Cena sucks. I think I have a lot of respect for the guy, what he does outside the ring, everything. John Cena is just, you know, he's the man. Against Seth Rollins, who was the man in his own right for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. And, I mean, what did you think about this match, Adam?
This was match of the night, in my opinion. This was an incredible match. The finish was really done just for the sake of popularity. It didn't really make much sense unless they answered the question on Raw, because Seth Rollins and John Cena, you know, Seth Rollins and John Stewart have been feuding. Of course, John Stewart helps, you know, Seth Rollins win the match. I think the finish was poorly executed because I think Cena may have taken too long to get up. I'm not sure, because John Stewart came in there and he started, and Cena took too long to get up, so he started looking at both Seth Rollins and John Cena as to which one do I hit with the chair. And at that point, I knew the swerve was coming, he's going to hit John Cena, because it's like, why would you look at John Cena?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was obviously a miscue there with the time, because when John Stewart came in the ring, like you just said, he was lost there. He was waiting for Cena to get up, and Cena wasn't getting up, and Cena was just still holding his damn nose. And yeah, it was awkward. It was kind of clunky there. But at the end, John Stewart, you know, helps Seth Rollins, and Rollins had the look of surprise on his face, like he wasn't really expecting that. So the swerve was done. I mean, a lot of people didn't like it. I didn't really mind it too much personally, because it sets up the fact that I think where they might go with this is that you know what. You are not going to surpass Ric Flair's record. I think that's what it comes down to.
Oh, yeah. And I love the fact that they hyped this match up so well on Raw the week before, where basically during the contract signing, John Cena goes, "Hey, Triple H, this is, I'm gonna shoot show you the Triple H. This is your boy, and you don't want me tying Ric Flair's record." And I love in the match, it was subtle, but I loved how John Cena actually used the figure four on Seth Rollins. It's kind of like, okay, not only am I going to tie Triple H's mentor's record, but I'm going to do it with the figure four. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, it was you know, a pretty good match, and a lot of people say it was a good match up until that point. One part of the match, though, that I got to speak of that was really just awkward and really sucked was the fact that John Cena attempted that springboard stunner, and he missed it.
Yes,
that right there, that shit was horrible. Cena needs to stop using that move. I think it looks completely, you know, dumb every time he does it. And that's just me personally. I don't care for the springboard stunner. It just looks stupid.
I think a more athletic wrestler could make it look better. It always looks clunky when Cena does it. And Steve Austin said in his podcast time and time again, you know, he doesn't mind per se that Cena does it, but the fact that he never wins with it makes the move look weak. Because think about it, you know, doing a springboard stunner, you know, should be more effective than a regular Stone Cold stunner. And yet, Steve Austin pinned people left and right with the regular Stone Cold stunner, but Cena can't do it with the added benefit of a springboard. So I know where Cena's, you know, Steve Austin's coming from. And actually, on Twitter, Steve Austin said on his account, springboard stunner equals zero results after John Cena did it.
Yeah, and it's going to be that way every single time the guy does it. The damn move is garbage. Cena is understanding, hey, stop doing it. I can understand if Cena wants to try something new, but go back to the drawing board with this one. That springboard stunner just ain't going to do it, man.
So I actually want to get your opinion on this, Frank D, and tell me what you think. I mean, it's hard to picture what John Cena's thinking, but I'm going to try to see if we can figure it out anyway. If you are John Cena, the current face of WWE, and you have the previous face of WWE, Steve Austin, basically publicly saying the move sucks and you never get wins with it, so why are you doing it? And yet you keep doing it? Do you think it's John Cena's ego being like, well, screw you, I'm the man now, so I'll do what I want to do?
I think it is. I mean, I honestly think it is. I think this John Cena basically saying, yeah, I'm the man now, you had your time, but I'm the man now, you know, pretty much, you know, shut the fuck up, I'm going to do what I want. I think that's pretty much what he's saying. And that's too bad that he feels that way, but Austin would know about it. I mean, Austin is the biggest draw ever in WWE, so the merchandise and all that. So Austin would know what he's talking about. Austin has said that about Cena as far as using the springboard stunner, that it's not good. He's also said, hey, you know, when you're doing the SCF, kind of crank back a little bit on that thing and make it look more believable. I mean, it's a damn shame, Adley, when Sasha Banks' statement looks more devastating than John Cena's SCF.
Agreed 100%, but that's actually, things like that is the reason why John Cena gets the slack that he does, because he takes certain liberties where he gets, I mean, he's a hard worker, but there are certain points in certain matches where he gets lazy, and he doesn't do things such as cranking back on the STF, and the difference is, if that was, if that was Cesaro doing the STF, and he did the same way John Cena does it, I guarantee you, as soon as he got back through the curtain, somebody in the gorilla position would be telling him, hey, you're going to crank back on it more. But because it's John Cena, they're not going to say word one to him. But also, that also kind of makes me, puts John Cena down a few pegs, because the guys like, Rock, Austin, Brett, Shawn, even Hunter, they are sticklers for their work. Not only did they really want to put on the best match possible, but they really tried to make sure that every single thing they did looked as legitimate as possible. Like, if any one of those guys did STF for their finish, I guarantee you they'd all crank back on it. But John Cena takes liberties for whatever reason and doesn't crank back on it all the way. And he's not a dummy. He's heard this a million times. Someone had to have told him, hey, why don't you crank back on it no more? But how can you don't crank back on it? But he chooses not to do it. So there's a certain bit of laziness there from a top guy, from the top guy, that the other top guys of the past would never even think of doing.
Yeah, there's a certain bit of laziness to it. There's a certain bit of ego to it that I'm John Cena and I can get away with these things, because at the end of the day, the little kiddies out there are still going to get my merch. I think that's pretty much what it comes down to. And, when you talk about, you mentioned The Rock a minute ago. I mean, The Rock had the same problem years ago when he would be out there trying to do the sharpshooter. And it didn't look all that good to me either. And it didn't look good to Bret the Hitman Hart.
I actually let that slide because Rock always said, as much as I hated the sharpshooter when he did it as a tribute to Owen Hart, so I let it slide. Even though he could have done it a little bit better, I gave him a pass on that one.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, it's The Rock, So we go from that to the Divas Revolution. Mind you, of what me and Atlee was just talking about that happened at TakeOver Brooklyn, how the crowd was just going crazy from the start for Sasha Banks and Bayley for the NXT Women's Championship. We go now, Atlee, to this piece of shit clusterfuck of a match that they had right here with Paige, Charlotte, and Becky Lynch, known as PCB, taking on Team Bad, Beautiful and Devastating, I think that's what it's called, of Sasha Banks, Naomi, and Tamina, versus the Ratchets themselves, the Bella Twins, and Alicia Fox. Not saying Alicia Fox is a Ratchet, but I'm talking about the Bellas. And this match here, I didn't really care for it, man. It was just awkward, because the fans wanted to see only one woman out of all those women out there, and that was Sasha Banks. And we didn't get our Sasha Banks. We didn't get it. And if we got it, it was only for a little bit.
I mean, whoever made the decision to keep Sasha Banks in the background for this match is a damn fool, because they saw the performance that she had last night. They knew she was going to get a decent reaction at SummerSlam, which she did, and they should have just played that. And they should have rode that bike until the wheels fell off, because they really could have done something. And I also found it weird that Becky Lynch pinned Brie Bella with a pump handle Yoridagi. And it was interesting, because I would have assumed that if one of the Bellas was going to lose this match, it should have been Nikki, the current Divas champion. But I need to speak to a larger point on this match, Frank, and let me know if you agree with me. The reason NXT, they're having so many good matches, because you have so many good wrestlers on the NXT roster. Four Horsewomen, with Bayley, Charlotte, Sasha Banks, but they also, Emma is good. They have a lot of good wrestlers there. But then when you throw them into a situation where they have to wrestle people that aren't nearly as good as them, such as Brie Bella, such as Alicia Fox, and especially such as Nikki Bella, you're not going to get the same results. I mean, part of the reason why NXT women's matches are so good is because of the talent, the talented professional wrestlers you have there. And the Bellas are not talented professional wrestlers. They've gotten a lot better, I'll give them that, but they are nowhere near the level of the NXT women.
I totally agree with you on that. And I'm going to say this right now. Some of the things that are bothering me with the Divas Revolution. There's been a report, I'm sure you've seen it, about possibility of John Cena nixing the plans of what the plan was going to be of putting the Divas Championship on Charlotte. Apparently Cena might have went on behalf of Nikki Bella and said, okay, now do that. Now, we don't know if that's true or not. It wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't be surprise me if it's true, but it also would surprise me if it is true, because every single time that Nikki Bella is on TV, they always talk about how close she is to breaking AJ's record. So I really think that's what they're heading. I think they do not want the wife of CM Punk being the longest reigning WWE Divas Champion, and they want that record erased as fast as possible. And the way to do that is just keep the belt on Nikki until it happens.
It's kind of like back in the day when Brock Lesnar used to be the youngest WWE champion, and then that became Randy Orton.
Oh, they fixed that real quick.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. Of course, now you don't know who the hell Randy Orton beat for the belt, but that's a different story. Nonetheless here, I'm going to tell you right now one of my problems with the whole Divas Revolution, and I'm really not understanding it, but what is up with all these damn six-man tag matches and tag matches? That's the first thing. Second thing is, why the hell is Alicia Fox out there with the Bellas? It's like, the way I look at that, it's kind of like, hey, we need some bimbo. And I'm not saying Alicia Fox is a bimbo, but this is just WWE's point of view. We need some bimbo to be with the Bellas to make this a 3-on-3-on-3. So, hey, Alicia Fox, hey, you're decent. Go out there and do it. I don't see any type of nothing between, no chemistry whatsoever between Alicia Fox and Bellas. I don't see that. I don't get it.
I assume she was there to take the losses for the Bellas, but Nikki Bella lost to Sasha Banks. Brie Bella lost last night to Becky Lynch, so that's definitely not the plan. I mean, I guess if you think of all the other divas on the roster, if you think about the ones that aren't being used, like if you think about Summer Rae, who you're a big fan of, I think Alicia Fox is probably the better choice of the two.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. Nikki Bella and her damn sister Brie, who jumped off, it was funny because she was coming off the top rope last night for a crossbody, and she yelled Brie mode to crickets, which I thought was very funny. And I'm going to say it like this, and people out there can agree or disagree. My opinion, Nikki Bella and Brie Bella are only getting the pushes they're getting because of who they're married to and who they're currently are fucking. That's how I look at that. Bottom line, there's nothing, I don't see anything remotely talented about the Bella Twins. I don't see a damn thing. I see two girls who were in WWE who wanted to leave WWE to go out there and do Hollywood. That shit didn't work. They come back to the whip, and all of a sudden now they're being shoved down my damn throat. And this is the reason why people don't take Divas matches seriously in WWE. That place last night crapped all over that tag match because you eliminated Sasha Banks from the damn match. Sasha Banks was what they wanted to see. Sasha Banks is who they cared about in that match, and you completely killed any kind of momentum. Nobody gave two shits about Nikki Bella. Nobody gives two shits about Nikki Bella holding on to the Divas Championship and beating AJ Lee's record. Who really gives a damn about that? That Divas Championship doesn't mean shit. I'm more concerned about the NXT Women's Championship than I am the Divas Championship. I don't give a damn about a belt with a butterfly on it. Period.
Bravo, Frank D. Bravo.
Just how I see it. So, Becky Lynch, Charlotte, and Paige. Paige is another one I can't stand, to be honest with you. I don't really give a shit about Paige. Don't see why people care about Paige. Just basically the female version of Sheamus coming out there looking like a damn jar of mayonnaise. That's just how I look at her. And I mean, she just embarrassed herself a couple weeks ago trying to be a little hood rat ratchet with Steve Austin, the Steve Austin show, trying to, you know, flirt with Austin. Austin basically went, hey, listen, you were supposed to be Hulk Hogan, and that's the reason why you're on here, because we couldn't get Hogan. That's just the bottom line. So I don't give a damn about her ass.
Yeah, man, I you know what's funny about you mentioning that, the Steve Austin podcast with Paige?
Yeah.
When Steve Austin did every other podcast before Paige, I would wake up the next morning, and every single site, including Gerwick.net, would always have a nice typed up report about the podcast and talking about all the news bits that came out of it. When I woke up the next morning, virtually nobody had a report about that podcast. So I figured, oh, it can't be that bad. I watched it, and after about 15 minutes, man, I turned that shit off.
I have not watched it. Yeah, I have not watched it, and I ain't gonna watch it.
Don't waste time.
Yeah, I ain't gonna. Yeah, I'm not gonna waste my time with it. I don't care for Paige. When you look at Paige, who started off with a bunch of momentum when she first came, and then it's just been, you don't know what Paige is supposed to be or whatever. She's with, Charlotte and Becky Lynch, who were having the best matches were in NXT. So you take Bayley, you take Becky Lynch, you take Charlotte. The way I would have done this would have been completely different. I would have brought up Becky Lynch, Charlotte, and Sasha Banks as a unit. That's what I would have done if you wanted to do it that way. But you got to have one for each because, I mean, the rest of these girls suck ass, and they know it. And Nikki Bella really sucks, and that's why she's still the Divas Champion, if you know what I mean. So, off of that bullshit, we go on to Kevin Owens versus Cesaro. And I thought that they were going to steal the show. I thought it was going to be a five-star match. It really wasn't. It was a good outing for Kevin Owens and Cesaro.
Man, this match was in the death spot of all death spots. I really think that by the time Kevin Owens and Cesaro made their entrance to the ring, people were just waiting for the main event. In my opinion, this match should have opened the show, and I think the fans, and I think it would have kickstarted SummerSlam into like a much better feeling if this match opened the show. But despite the fact that it was in the death spot, both wrestlers worked their ass off in this match. And at the end, Kevin Owens gets the win with the pop-up power bomb. He needed the win. There were some people telling me they thought Cesaro should have won, but the way I look at it, Kevin Owens, they've pushed a little more. So I think he needed a big win like this to kind of get him back on the right track, where Cesaro has never had that big win, so it was much easier to beat him than it was Kevin Owens.
Well, I'll tell you this too about that. You mentioned the match being in the death spot. I mean, it was in a death spot more ways than one because you just came off that lame ass women's match that we just saw before that. So the fans were already like, oh, look at this shit. And all of a sudden now you put Owens and Cesaro out there to try to breathe life back into the crowd, and that's what they did. But at the same time, it could have been so much better than what it was. But I enjoyed the match, so I enjoyed the spots. I mean, Cesaro is on fire. Kevin Owens is on fire. But anybody in their right mind thought that Kevin Owens was going to go out there two nights in a row and lose in the Barclays Center, you were on something if you thought that was going to happen. The guy just lost the match with Finn Balor the night before, so you already knew right then and there that he was going to get the win over Cesaro.
Oh, completely agreed. I mean, they were not going to make Kevin Owens lose twice whatsoever. And again, I mean, I didn't sense the excitement from him in this match that I did last night. Again, he may have been very banged up from that ladder match the night before. It probably was, but there definitely seemed that he wasn't as excited as he was the night before.
Oh, I totally agree with you. Which led to the main event, the match that, everybody wanted to see. Well, I didn't want to see it. I thought it was a little too late for it. But nonetheless, we saw the match anyways. It was Suplex City versus Tombstone City. If you're an old school WWF fan like myself, like Adley, you know that Tombstone City was around a lot longer than Suplex City. I mean, Gorilla Monsoon used to call it Tombstone City all the time. So this led to Brock Lesnar, the one who conquered the streak, versus The Undertaker. And the match started off crazy because I've never seen anybody start whooping Undertaker's ass while the Taker still has his hat on.
I popped for that big time, Frank, because again,
yeah,
I've never seen that before, and it was just amazing to see this guy be like, you know what, I ain't waiting for the bell against The Undertaker of all people. It was awesome.
Right. And, I mean, it was a good out brawl. I mean, Taker looked a lot better in this match than he did at WrestleMania 30. But I will say this, man. If this was the last hurrah for The Undertaker, which I'm pretty sure it's not, he's telling a pretty good story coming out of it. Because what I got from this match, especially with the finish, which we'll talk about in a minute, but what I got from this was this guy was doing everything he could to Brock Lesnar, and nothing was working. And, they did the false finish at the end when Taker was tapping out, the bell rings, and everybody's looking around in confusion. I'm confused. My girl's confused. We don't know what the hell is going on. And then all of a sudden, the referee, Charles Robinson, is going at it with the ring, with the timekeeper at ringside. Taker low blows Lesnar. Low blows him. Hits him right in the nuts. All right? And puts him in Hell's Gate. Brock Lesnar flips off The Undertaker, and Brock, you know, the Undertaker gets the win on Brock Lesnar. But what I'm getting at here is simply what it comes down to, what I think they're going with the story is that the Undertaker is so beat up, and Taker knows he's at the end of his run, at the end of his rope. He had to resort to, you know, hitting a dude in a nutsack to get the win.
I think that's definitely the story they're going for, because obviously with the finish, he tapped out. And, you know, of course, the ref didn't see it. The ring announcer, timekeeper, called for the bell. And this finish has been heavily disputed on Twitter and all forms of social media since it happened. And, look, when it comes to big-budget pro wrestling in the United States, and we mean, and what I mean by sports entertainment, WWE, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to get a straight finish. Does it suck? Yes, absolutely. But if you want straight finishes, watch Ring of Honor. Watch New Japan Pro Wrestling. I, in fact, do. And you got to accept the fact that most times, the main event, WWE is going to add a little bit of drama, you know, to their big main event matches. Now, this particular finish, Frank D, as somebody that's booked, you know, independent wrestling shows, if someone came to me with this finish, I would have thought it was gold. I guarantee, like, whoever came up with this finish, whoever said it, whoever wrote it down, it probably looked amazing on paper, even sounded better aloud. But when it actually came time to execute it, it came off very poorly for a variety of reasons. Because, number one, the timekeeper ringing the bell. Every timekeeper on the planet knows that you, no matter what happens in the match, you do not call for the bell until the referee tells you, ring the damn bell. Every timekeeper knows that. And this timekeeper, this one and only time, breaks that rule and decides to ring the bell himself. Now, they could probably say, yeah, it was so shocking to see the Undertaker tap out that the timekeeper jumped the bell. Okay, I can live with that. I can maybe say, you know what, that may be a good way to cover your ass as far as explaining that particular piece of the story. But also what I didn't like was once they actually got Taker out of the ring and he walked away, and then Heyman is just screaming at the referee, he tapped out. Heyman starts saying, look at the footage, and they showed it. And then right away, Frank, they show the shot where Undertaker taps out. And in my opinion, if they really want to play up the drama, they should have showed a few different angles where, hey, okay, obviously you couldn't see the Undertaker tapping out. So that way, when you keep seeing angle after angle of him not tapping out, everybody is like, hey, what the hell is Paul talking about? Of course he didn't tap, it's the Undertaker. He never taps. But then, maybe the fourth or fifth shot they should have shown was the actual shot where he tapped out. Then it would have gotten over even more. Then it would have been a shocker. It would have been that, holy shit, he really did tap out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that they're going to have a third match between these two. It could be a Survivor Series. I'm most likely, if I'm a betting man on this, it'll be at WrestleMania next year. I think that what's going on right now is we are seeing the last run of The Undertaker. I think it's winding up. And I think that he will have the final match with Brock at WrestleMania 32, in which I think the two are probably going to shake hands and embrace, and it'll be Taker's farewell.
Yeah, it's that. I think we're getting the rubber match at WrestleMania. And as you pointed out, too, they have a built-in story. Taker had to do 3 low blows. He actually tapped out for the first time as a babyface. And now you're at the point where it looks like he's older, and he has to resort to these cheating tactics in order to get the win. And I think this storyline, this finish proves that WWE is clearly positioned Undertaker as the heel of the story.
Well, I'm really surprised last night that we did not see the return of Kane. I'm really surprised that Kane didn't come out. And, you know, I mean, Adley, as we're doing the Raw deal right now, you know, we have heard rumors that tonight's show on Monday Night Raw, we got Ric Flair in the house, we got Sting going to be in the house tonight on Raw. Undertaker is not going to be there. Undertaker was rumored to have been there for tonight's show. No, Undertaker is not there. Undertaker is gone. So he's not going to be there. I'm kind of curious to see where they go with Brock Lesnar and Undertaker at this point. But, you know, nonetheless, it was a good match. Brock Lesnar was a beast. Undertaker couldn't slay the beast. He had to resort to, you know, hitting him in the nuts to get him to go. And Taker, here's the thing about Brock Lesnar and that finish last night that was so cool. It kind of reminds me of the finish to WrestleMania 13 with Bret Hart and Steve Austin. Brock Lesnar did not tap out. Brock Lesnar just faded. but he never tapped. So that'd be where Brock can come back and say, you know what, Taker never beat me, I beat him. So if you put it into perspective here, Taker has lost to Brock Lesnar twice, but in a record book, it'll go down and Taker beat him. So they're kind of like 1-1 right now. Rubber match is going to be probably at WrestleMania 32, in which, like I said, Taker probably loses that match, but he shakes Brock's hand, they embrace, showing respect, and that is the last, you know, the last, pretty much the last ride for The Undertaker.
I mean, he's working more shows than he has in the last few years. He's working a tour in Mexico coming up in October. There's also the definitive Undertaker Blu-ray DVD collection coming out later this year, and also, this Survivor Series coming up in November is the 25th anniversary, if I'm
not
mistaken. And that's the day the Dead Man debuted. So I wonder if he makes an appearance or does something on the Survivor Series, knowing it could possibly be his last Survivor Series. And, of course, you got WrestleMania, and even though they don't advertise him from Texas, we all know, hey, this Texas is the man's hometown, and there's probably a Hall of Fame, you know, induction in for him as well. So I think this is definitely his swan song between now and WrestleMania. And the key thing is, obviously you would think, okay, if he's losing, and if this is his last match, obviously he loses. But if there's any wrestler you're going to let get the big win on the way out, it's probably Taker. And it wouldn't surprise me if they gave him the win. They made the exception and gave him the big win going out, you know, of his career. So I really don't know who they put over in that match. But, Frank, in your opinion, Taker, Lesnar 3, the definitive WrestleMania 32 main event?
I believe it would be. It has to be. It has to be the last match. It has to be the final match that goes on. And like I said before, I mean, you mentioned there about the possibility of Taker going maybe into the Hall of Fame next year. I don't see it happening next year. Simply because Taker's still active. I mean, even though he's on that reduced schedule, he's still somewhat active. So I don't think they'll put him in so soon, but it'll definitely happen. I mean, of course, Taker's a Hall of Famer. Taker's a Hall of Famer in any book, you know, so it'll happen, but I don't think it'll happen next year. But I do think that match needs to go on last. Just like last night it went on last, it needs to go on last at WrestleMania 32. And I think that we will see Taker Lesnar 3, and I think that at the end of it, they're going to show that respect. And that's it.
I mean, quick thing about Kane, if Kane is coming back and the idea is for him to feud with Brock Lesnar, it cannot be corporate Kane. It has to be the big red sheet machine with the mask doing his thing. Hellfire and Brimstone. It cannot be corporate Kane.
It has to be old school Kane. You're right. It has to be Kane coming back with the red suit. It has to be that Kane. It cannot be corporate Kane. It can't be any of this dumb shit. It has to be old school Hell, you know, Fire, Brimstone, Kane, Michael Myers kind of Kane, you know what I mean? That's what it has to be. And maybe that's what we will see at Survivor Series. We will see Kane versus Brock Lesnar with an appearance by the Deadman. That's where I can see them going.
I like it.
So that's what I think will happen. But going back real quick to, we were mentioning earlier, we were talking about Ring of Honor. And the fact that, you know, Jay Lethal is the Ring of Honor world champion and he's a TV champion. And, you know, wanted to point out that pretty much they copied that shit last night with Seth Rollins. You know, Seth Rollins is now the world champion and the U.S. champion at the same time, straight out of Ring of Honor.
And I wonder what they're going to do, because after Jay Lethal won the world title, they were the next week on TV, Nigel McGuinness came out and said, hey, okay, obviously you're going to forfeit the, you know, you're going to surrender the TV title to keep the world title. And Jay Lethal's like, hell no, I earned these.
Right.
I'm keeping both. So I wonder if Seth Rollins does the same thing on Raw tonight.
Hey, you got to watch to find out. And it's kind of funny because I remember as well a certain time when another guy named, but he relinquished it soon after, but the Ultimate Warrior was the WWF and Intercontinental Champion at the same time. And I also remember when Booker T was the WCW World Champion and the United States Champion at the same time.
I thought about that as well, believe you me.
Right. So it's the little things that we remember that kind of look at it like today. Oh, yeah, I remember that. So that's what we're going on. So if we have to put down, just like with NXT Brooklyn, Abby, on a 5-star scale, where do you put SummerSlam 2015?
I give it a 3. I think the two finishes, especially the Jon Stewart finish, that kind of put a damper on what was a great, 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 great match between John Cena and Seth Rollins, who I think, you know, those two are destined to wrestle each other forever. Those two were tailor-made to wrestle each other in a professional wrestling ring. I mean, they always have great matches, always. And unlike John Cena and Randy Orton matches, where you just got tired of seeing them wrestle and doing the same thing, Seth Rollins and John Cena do different things in every single match they do, and I'll never get tired of seeing those two wrestle each other. But also, I think the extra hour really hurt it, because again, SummerSlam is trying to become the WrestleMania of the summer, and of course, I mean, summertime event, you know, why not make it, try to make SummerSlam as big as WrestleMania? But the difference is, you know why WrestleMania is always an extra hour, because there is so much stuff to be done for WrestleMania, where I think the extra hour kind of hindered SummerSlam. I really do.
I have to agree with you. It just dragged on and dragged on. Too many tag matches for my liking. And right now, I'm going to just have to give it, I'm going to give it 3.5 stars. I'm going to tell you why I give it 3.5. I just enjoyed the hell out of New Day singing. That was great.
Oh, so, my God. I almost spit my water out when they started telling fans in Brooklyn that you know nothing about hip-hop.
That wasn't that classic.
That was gold. That was money.
And hip hop originated in the South.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it.
That was just crazy. That was just crazy funny. And it's like, I mean, they were chanting "New Day Rocks" at the end there.
Yeah, the "New Day Sucks" chants are definitely going by the wayside in favor of "New Day Rocks."
Right. So I mean, I'm going to give it 3.5 stars just simply on that. I mean, it was a great showcase for Titus O'Neil and New Day last night. Everything was over the top. Seth Rollins, even though he kind of looked like the White Ranger last night.
Yes, he did.
It was still a good outing last night. I just wish Cena would stop using that damn springboard stunner. And other than that, it was a SummerSlam that had its moments. I'll say that much.
One more thing I got to bring up quickly is that usually, I mean, you and I have heard a lot of chatter on the internet about how, you know, the ratings are low because of Seth Rollins. Even Vince Russo went out of his way to say that Seth Rollins isn't drawing as a champion. You know, but maybe it is, maybe it isn't. It's really hard to tell in this particular climate in 2015. But usually, whether a WrestleMania winning champion keeps the belt or loses the belt at SummerSlam is a pretty good barometer historically to tell you how WWE thinks of how they're doing as champion. The fact that Seth Rollins beat John Cena and is now both the U.S. and world champion, that tells you that they are very happy. There's no buyer's remorse with pushing Seth Rollins. They are very happy with what they're getting.
Well, I'll tell you what, my thing is simply this. I, you know, have said it once, and I'm going to say it again, I'm sticking to it. I don't really buy Rollins as the world champion. I don't buy him as the guy. I just don't see it. And maybe at some point in time, it'll happen for me, but just right now, yeah, the guys go out there having kick-ass matches or whatever, but do I buy him as a WWE World Heavyweight Champion? Not right now. No, I don't.
With Rollins, there's times I buy him and times I don't, but I give him 60-40 in his favor. That's just me, though.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm kind of like right now, I'm 50-50 on him right now. But I'm leaning towards, I don't really buy him as the world champion. But it could change in the future, because he's a very talented guy. So I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see where they go with Rollins from this point on. Like I said, right now we're recording the Raw deal, but Monday Night Raw is on live on the USA Network, so we shall see where they go from here. And before we check out right now, Atlee, you go ahead and plug your social media.
If you guys, thank you very much for listening to another episode of The Raw Deal here at GoWork.net. Frank, thank you very much for having me once again. And guys, if you want to hit me up on Twitter, just hit me at Atlee Green. That is my Twitter tag. Also, I blog about wrestling once in a while. Hit me up at thegreenscreen.net.
Absolutely. And if you want to make a contribution to the GRP and GoWork.net, head over right now to ProWrestlingTees.com/Gerwick, 7 great designs, $19.99 plus shipping and handling. They ship internationally. They ship domestically. PayPal, debit, credit, whatever. They got you covered. Check it out right now, ProWrestlingTees.com/Gerwick. I want to give a couple of shout-outs right now to a couple of people out there who are listeners of the GRP and the Raw Deal. First of all, my boy Efren Guzman from New York, the Atomic Podcast. Check it out right now, Atomic Podcast on SoundCloud. And do you have anybody you want to shout out, Allie?
Yes, our very dedicated listener, Chris Lappin from England. It's been a comedy of errors as to a package item from a contest he won here at Gerwick.net, but I promise you, your package is coming.
Sounds good. And for the latest pro wrestling news, keep it locked to www.gerwck.net, Gerwick.net, pro wrestling since 1997. I'm Frank D for Abby Green, and we'll catch you next time on The Raw Deal.